This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
Besser shoots and scores right off the draw. First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes.
On the official home of the Canucks.
And it's Markstrom again, this time with the glove.
Elias Pettersson, and shoots, scores!
Sportsnet 650.
Good morning, Vancouver. We're back, some local programming. Vic Nizar, Jamie Dodd, filling in on the Scott Rintoul Show for the next hour. Then we'll take you to Canucks Central at noon. Again, Scott Rintoul away for the week with some much-earned time off. He'll be back next Monday just in time for when the Canucks get ready to return to action. And we get some downtime here, so we'll get into a bunch of Canucks stuff as well as we get moving along. It is bi-week content, Jamie. The best content.
Hashtag content.
Hashtag content. But if making some news today, Ian McIntyre, you can read it up on now. It's sportsnet.ca. Doing a Q&A with Jim Benning. We'll unpack that as we go along for the next 2 hours here. You can share your thoughts, 650-650. Also, 604-280-0650, of how you can get involved. Just give us a shout. We'll also be talking to Megan Augusta in just a couple of minutes here. Obviously, the NHL All-Star Game upon us. Well, just about. There's still some games going on today. But couldn't be here before you know it. She was named to the 3-on-3 Elite Women's Game, which also takes place during All-Star Weekend.
That's going to be a highlight of All-Star Weekend mm-hmm. for me, because what's the one thing, not just in hockey, but in every sport that we always complain about with All-Star Games? Is there's no intensity. And
right.
When Canadian women and the U.S. women get on the ice together, even at an all-star event, even at an exhibition, you know there's going to be intensity.
There'll be some juice to it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be one of the exciting parts of All-Star Weekend. So we'll talk to Megan in just a couple of minutes here. But, again, let's start with the Q&A that is, again, up on sportsnet.ca. You can check it out. Ian McIntyre, one-on-one with Canucks General Manager Jim Benning. And... you know, just the main takeaways, it feels like, obviously it's been a successful season. It helps calm some waters of trying to do knee-jerk reactions, especially in a season where you're coming into it, could have been fairly contentious. But winning kind of solves a lot of issues. And being in first place, heading into their own break, solves a lot of issues. And it felt like, the overall sentiment felt like Jim Benning wants the still waters to basically continue.
Yeah. He's not looking to shake things up. He's obviously not feeling a lot of pressure to make a big splash at this trade deadline. Understandably so, given where the team is at and how the rest of their division works. And you're absolutely right. It was a lot. You could tell it was a lot more comfortable for Jim Benning to give this sort of interview this season, right? As opposed to seasons in the past where there's been a lot more pressing questions. It's like, okay, not that it's a softball interview, but it's just when things are going well, you have a lot more positives to talk about.
Yeah, and you know, there's some quotes here about Jacob Markstrom, because obviously that's going to be a tricky contract negotiation, not just because of how well he's playing, but the overall goalie market. And I want to play a clip from Chris Johnson yesterday talking about Robin Lehner at some point as well. But yeah, Robin Lehner's in that conversation. Braden Holtby's in that conversation. Jacob Markstrom obviously falls into it. And, you know, Jim Benning basically says, we're not going to get a deal done unless it's a fair deal. At the end of the day, it has to work for them. It has to work for us. So it has to be a fair deal. We understand that. And we want to work towards that. It's Jim Benning speaking on Jacob Markstrom and how that contract negotiation goes. And look, it's fascinating because it changes almost by the game, because we get better performances from Jacob Markstrom, and it just adds to the catalog of elite level goaltending the Canucks have been getting. And you come into the season, like I came into the season around, you know, 4.7, 4.9, around there, and it'll probably creep up, but
oh yeah,
that would be the starting point. And now it feels like we're creeping closer towards 5.7,
yeah,
maybe even
six.
Higher.
Yeah. And it's so hard to tell with the goalie market, and IMAX says that in the piece, and especially with what happened this past offseason. Now, obviously, Markstrom was never going to be in the Sergei Bobrovsky echelon as far as contracts go, but you do wonder if that gives some teams pause. What's happening with Bobrovsky in Florida after he signed that mega deal? do teams take a step back and reevaluate a little bit their strategy of how they want to play pay goalies? And does that have a trickle-down effect to a guy like Markstrom where, you know, all of a sudden the market in general is less robust than maybe he was expecting? That's a possibility. Obviously, from a Canucks management perspective, they wouldn't mind that. The other thing I thought was interesting on the Markstrom conversation, we'll get into this more throughout the show, is the first answer he gives about signing Jacob Markstrom before July 1st. He says, look, Markstrom likes Vancouver. He's been here a long time. He's been with Travis Green a long time. He likes the guys on the team, and the guys like him. And the idea of chemistry and the mood of a team, I think some fans, and I include myself into this, tend to think it's overrated. And it's something we talk about, but it's hard to judge, and you never really know exactly how important it is. But when it comes to the salary cap league, if your chemistry and your culture is so good that you can get just even a tiny discount, that obviously becomes hugely important. We haven't seen that yet from the Canucks, but the Markstrom contract negotiations are going to be a bit of a measuring stick for how close they are to that point.
So noodle with that one. We'll get to that in just a minute. Pleased to be joined now with a three-time Olympic gold medalist, Megan Agosta, and also one of our fine-serving members of the VPD here in the area. Megan, thanks a lot for giving us some time here today. I know it's a busy time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And also congratulations on the big announcement, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be on Saturday on the 24th here, this 3-on-3 tournament, Team USA, Team Canada, American All-Stars. I don't know if we're officially calling it Team Canada to Team USA, but that's how it feels like. This rivalry continues. What does this mean to have this event?
You know what? I'm really excited to be a part of something so amazing. And I think it's unreal how, you know, the NHL has hopped on board to help grow the game. And I think this is going to be one of the highlights in my career, that's for sure.
Well, it's great that you say that, too, because, you know, the NHL has taken at times a stance and a position of, like, you know, they don't want to be seen as a bully of, you know, trying to get involved into the game. Is this an encouraging step for you of how they're getting involved in women's hockey?
You know what, 100%. I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time. But, once we do have, you know, the NHL on board and they're basically supporting, you know, women's hockey and having that league. Like, it might not be in my career and my kind of lifetime, but it's all about what we do now and the legacy that we leave for the younger generation. And you know, it's pretty amazing. I have a 1-year-old daughter. Her name's Chance, and you know, this is just the start of paving the way for women in sport. And again, it's what we do now that's going to pave the way for the younger generation, for them to have the opportunity that, you know, us women players didn't have growing up, but to also play the game they love and, you know, being financially stable doing it.
Megan, one of the things we know about the NHL All-Star Game is that there's usually not a lot of high-intensity hockey at it. Now, of course, whenever Team Canada and Team USA match up, it's the opposite. It's an exhibition event, but still, it's those two teams. How much intensity should we expect on the ice out there for this one?
You know what, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, it's about, you know, growing the game and whatnot. But let's face it, when Canada and U.S. face off, you know, nobody, you know, both teams don't want to lose. And for us, I think we're going to have a lot of fun, but also it's going to be a battle. And, you know, it is only 20 minutes and it is going to go by quick. But I'm really excited to be a part of it. And I can't wait to kind of get there and just experience, the whole weekend.
You mentioned it. It's 2 10-minute periods, 3-on-3. It's a short game, but it's also a long time to be playing 3-on-3 hockey. Or have you thought about, you know, how you have to adjust your game to that kind of format?
Knowing myself, like what I bring to the table is speed, and I do see the ice really well. So for there to only be, you know, 6 players on the ice at a time, it leaves a lot of ice. And, that's kind of my game. So, again, just going there, enjoying the moment and using, you know, the skill set that I have to not only be successful as an individual, but as a team as well.
Megan Agosta joins us here on the Scott Rintoul Show. Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd filling in for Scott. But want to talk to you. You know, you're talking about the speed, that you bring to the game. Fans in this market are getting accustomed to seeing a new style of hockey at the NHL level. You know, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, you know, smaller players, but they're playing with so much speed. You know, what changes has women's hockey gone through over the course of your career here?
You know, I think, you know, both men's and women's hockey has changed drastically from the time, you know, I put on my skates, like when I was a little girl at the age of six. And, you know, it's the skill sets nowadays, the speed, you know, the playmaking. I think it's more of a finesse game as opposed to, you know, that gritty game. And yeah, you know, you see it both on the men's and women's side. And, you know, when I took that year off to pursue my career in law enforcement with the Vancouver Police, when I came back, it was almost an eye-opener. And I was like, holy cow, like, hockey's come such a long way, and I've only been out of it for a year. So, you know, in today's, I guess, society, we have, you know, those skills coaches, we have, you know, the skating coaches, and, you know, that has helped the game, I guess, get to that next level, and it's only going to continue getting better, if that even makes sense.
And as the game grows, like, yes, this is Team America versus Team Canada, but for the other competing nations around the world, obviously it's been dominated by these two countries, but as the game grows and as the skill evolves, do you feel like they're going to get more competitive?
You know what, 100%. I think if you look on the men's side, it always, you know, took these other countries to catch up to Canada and U.S., and, you know, now it's a battle there, and, you know, it's only a matter of time on the women's side. And as you saw last, you know, World Championships, Finland ended up beating Team Canada to go into the, you know, finals and play Team USA. So, you know, and you can never take any country for granted. You need to really focus on, you know, which team you're playing on that specific day, and not, you know, look too far ahead. And, you know, I know in my career, since I've, you know, played with Team Canada, you know, Team Canada and Team USA has done a great job with, you know, showing, you know, these other countries in Europe, you know, what they do and what they do to be successful both on and off the ice. And I think, you know, these other countries have gotten a lot better, and you know, it is a battle, and you want to be able to play against the best to be the best. So, you know, whatever country, you know, Team Canada is facing, we need to be prepared every single day, day in and day out, to you know, beat those teams so that we can move on to that next game and get to that finals to, you know, have the opportunity to, you know, win gold and bring gold back to Canada. So again, you know, like it's amazing to see how, you know, hockey has evolved, especially on the women's side. And, you know, again, I think that it's only going to get better. And, you know, this is just an amazing step in the right direction with, you know, the NHL bringing, you know, the women's game to, you know, their kind of weekend and their showcase. And, you know, I'm very honored to be a part of it. And again, I think it's going to be, you know, one of my top highlights in my whole career.
Other than actually obviously playing in the event and skating with your teammates against the Americans, the All-Star Weekend, as you said, it's a showcase. It's such an event. What are you most looking forward to about that weekend?
I think just being there and you know, enjoying the opportunity and the experience and taking it all in, but also knowing that, you know, there's so many younger little girls watching and, you know, looking up to you. And, you know, ever since I was 18 and I went to my first Olympics in 2006, I had to grow up pretty quickly because I was, you know, I was now like that role model for the younger generation. And, you know, to be able to go to this event and be there, and there's going to be so many little girls and even boys in the stands watching and wanting to be us and, you know, having that goal and having that dream. And for me, it's not about the gold medals and the silver medal that I've won. It's about trying to inspire the younger generation to do something special in their lives. And if I could do that, then my job is done.
You mentioned, of course, you know, trying to inspire and help grow the game. And for fans here in the Lower Mainland, we don't have a professional women's team in the area to support. If there's fans listening today and they say, hey, I really want to help take the women's game to the next level, I want to be a part of that, what are some things they can do to help the game grow, as you say?
You know what, I think, number one, it comes to, you know, experience and knowledge of the game. And, you know, I know it's tough, but, you know, getting yourself out there, taking the different courses to, you know, learn, I guess, try to, you know, get alongside somebody who has the experience and who has played at a higher level. And then just, I guess, I think the biggest thing for me is just like having fun and enjoying it and you know, being a young little girl and even putting on the jersey now and skating out onto the ice. You know, even though I am an adult, I just think, you know, play free and have fun. And play like you're that little girl putting, you know, your hockey skates on for the first time and really enjoying every single opportunity. And, you know, being a police officer in the city of Vancouver and, you know, even putting on that uniform and making a difference is, you know, something that I don't take lightly, and something that, I enjoy doing, and, you know, being there when somebody calls 911 and, being and making a difference in people's lives. Like, I think that's what's super important. And, you know, my life is super challenging out here because there is no women's league, like you said, and, eating, sleeping, training at different times because I'm working shift work. I wouldn't change my decision for anything. I'm very proud to say that I represent the Vancouver Police Department, and I'm a part of that team. And, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to continue playing for Canada and having those opportunities to go to the World Championships and the Olympics. But, you know, it isn't easy because I have to do, you know, I have to work. I have, not only a one-year-old daughter, but I have two stepboys at home. So, you know, people always ask, like, how do you do it? And, you know, I make zero excuses. And again, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get those opportunities. And when, you know, I do get that call from Team Canada, I'm going to be ready. And it has been tough. But, you know, when I do retire from hockey, I would love to someday, you know, coach my daughter Chance and her team and, help grow the game that way. I mean, I have a hockey school back east that I put on every year, every summer. And, you know, it's about giving back. And for me, I think that's really important is, you know, again, inspiring the younger generation. And with the knowledge and experiences that I have and the role model that I am, you know, both, you know, in policing and in hockey, I think it's amazing to be able to, you know, take the time and, you know, give these younger athletes a chance. And I think for me, leading into this next Olympic cycle, I know deep down that, you know, the Vancouver Police are going to support me every step of the way. And I think for me, it's about getting that chance with Hockey Canada and, you know, having them, you know, understand, you know, my situation with being here and working and having a full-time job and, you know, having a family at home. But they just need to know that, you know, I'm doing everything I can to be the best that I could be. And I just need that one chance and for them to believe in me and know that I still have what it takes to help the team be successful, you know, leading forward.
Well, and we should mention if there are fans here in BC, in the Lower Mainland, who want to support the women's game, the rivalry series continues early in February. There's a game on February 3rd in Victoria and on February 5th here in Vancouver at Rogers Arena. The U.S., they took the first two games of this series back in December. I imagine the Canadians are pretty motivated to even things up out on the West Coast here, huh?
100%. Unfortunately, I'm not a part of the team that's coming here this time around. I will be actually working night shift that night, so I'll be making sure the streets are safe. But you know what? You know, Canada, we have, you know, a lot to prove. I know we've beaten them in the past, and we need to just continue, you know, playing Canadian hockey and proving to not only ourselves, but to Team USA that we are the better team and, you know, one step at a time. but it's going to be very exciting for Team Canada to come and play here in Canada, in Victoria and Vancouver. And unfortunately, again, I won't be a part of that that game. But yeah, I know I wish them the best of luck and I'll be cheering them on every step of the way.
Megan, we'll get you out on this. You kind of mentioned that eventually, you know, there will come a time when there is one league, and this is a step. What is the next step here?
You know what, I think, you know, we're doing everything we can to, I guess, help grow the game, and it's just a matter of, you know, people believing in us, and I know that the NHL wants to, you know, come on board and help us get to that next stage, and you know, it's going to take time. And, you know, this is just one amazing step in the right direction to where, you know, we want women's hockey to be. And again, it's what we do now that's in the legacy that we leave behind that's going to give these younger, you know, girls the opportunity to play and play the game they love while getting paid. And, you know, it's, again, it's not going to happen overnight. But, you know, deep down, just, you know, having the belief that, hey, women's hockey players and women, you know, who play sports in general, are great athletes. And once we have more people believe in that and want to hop on board financially to help, you know, grow the game, whether it be, you know, hockey or any other sport, and just having that belief and giving us that chance, you know, there's going to be no looking back.
She is Megan Augusta, joining us, three-time Olympic gold medalist and protecting our streets as well. Megan, thank you so much for giving us some time and enjoy the weekend.
No problem. Thank you so much. You guys as well.
That is some great, great words. And look, it's going to be one of the highlights of All-Star Weekend coming up this week. And, you know, when we have a local member, wanted to bring her on because it's going to be so cool. And also, like, there's a resolution here that one day will come forward for the women's league to have one league. And some of the acrimony that goes on between the two leagues is going to get resolved. But it's a step like this weekend that you hope is the initial to get to that endpoint.
Absolutely. And I thought, you know, her answer about the rivalry series, because she played in the first two games in December. And she's not going to be able to play in the ones here in her hometown because she has to work. And she has an extremely important job, and I understand that. And it's something we really respect about her, but it also really highlights the differences between what these athletes go through to compete at the highest level versus what players in the NHL, what they experience, right? Like, she's literally, this is a big game in her hometown against their top rival, and she won't be able to participate in it because she has other demands on her life. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of peek behind the curtain and at where the game is at and why she's so excited about this opportunity at All-Star Weekend.
Not the only thing that's going to be happening at All-Star Weekend. That's Bacon Nazar, Jamie Dodd here on the Scott Rintoul Show, filling in for Scott, who's back on Monday. Of course, a lot of Canucks going to be on hand as well for the skills comp and the game itself. And it's funny that you mentioned that the 3-on-3 women's game is going to be a lot more intense than what we expect to see the day after in the All-Star game. But look, what are fair expectations to you know, do you put any expectations on Markstrom, Patterson, Hughes, or is it just have fun and let's see what you can do?
Have fun, let's see what you can do.
I mean, like, Brock's had a great time there.
Yeah. I like the skills comp more than the All-Star game.
I love the skills competition.
Yeah. So, but even then, you know, okay, I want to see.
Okay, who will have the best showing at the skills competition?
It's got to be Petey, right?
I was going to say it's got to be Markstrom.
Yeah, goalies in the skill competition, though.
What if he just takes it seriously? He's a pretty intense competitor.
You can go a long way just taking it seriously at the skills comp. That's true. But, they're going to do the normal skills comp, then they're also going to do the new Top Golf one where they're firing from the stands, right? I mean, I want to see Pettersson in that. I think Pettersson could do a good job in that one.
I kind of want to see Quinn Hughes in, like, the obstacle course.
Yeah, for sure.
He's just, like, race right
skating through. And the puck handling. He's well suited for that.
It'd be great.
Pettersson in the shooting accuracy, like, would be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
The passing.
Or hardest shot.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun this weekend in St. Louis. We'll come back again. We'll talk a bit about what happened with Jim Benning's conversation with Ian McIntyre, which you can read up at sportsnet.ca. Canucks Central coming up at noon. Programming note, too, later today on the program. Ryan Kessler of one half of the Kess and Juice podcast. I think you may have formerly played for the Vancouver Canucks, too.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, right. That's why that podcast is so popular in the city. Ryan Kessler joins the program 5 o'clock later today. It's Bick Nazar, Jamie Dodd, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the Scott Rintoul Show. Bick Nazar, Jamie Dodd filling in for Scott Rintoul, who will be back on Monday. Some cool news. Canucks just putting this out. The Young Stars Tournament is returning in Penticton with the Calgary Flames, Edmonton Oilers, and the Winnipeg Jets. Much to the glee of many of people.
Including the executive producer of our Canucks broadcast, Cam Barra, who is frantically pumping his fist in the control room because he gets to go on a trip to Penticton in this fall.
September 11th to the 15th.
Let's go.
I don't know how it goes. Four teams, round robin. This is great. It was unfortunate it didn't get going this year. It's a nice kickoff to the season.
So we'll maybe get a little Hoglander action.
Woo!
Maybe.
A little put coals in.
Maybe.
Maybe.
And don't you think Hoglander has the kind of attitude where he's like, I'm going to run this tournament. I'm going to score a lacrosse goal every game.
I'll do it on a unicycle.
I'm going to lay out a fool. I'm going to run this show.
He'll have more
That's
time.
That's going to be awesome.
Over under 1.5 lacrosse attempts from Hoglander.
In the whole tournament?
Yeah.
Over.
I mean, it's a quick tournament.
Yeah. Well, what is it, like 3 or 4 games?
Sounds right. 3 games.
Over.
2 lacrosse contempts in 3 games?
Absolutely. Now, the only question is if he scores on the first attempt, then it's under, obviously.
Well, that's part of the equation.
I know. But maybe he misses the first attempt, and then he's like, well, now I have to do it again. Comes back with the second attempt.
Or the logic would be like, oh, I missed the first attempt. I'm actually trying to get on the team. Is the coach going to look poorly upon it if I try it again?
I think that's how you and I think. I don't think that's how Niels Höglander thinks.
try again.
Not saying I know him well, but that doesn't seem like his personality to me.
But yeah, it's good that it's back.
It's great.
Jet Wu, Höglander,
Tyler Madden.
Yeah, it and whoever else gets drafted between now and then.
Absolutely.
Of course, there is no first round pick potentially
as of right now. Yeah,
there's no third round pick.
A lot of hype on that second round pick,
which is. Which is something Jim Benning talked about today as he met with Ian McIntyre on Sportsnet.ca. Just kind of doing a Q&A. And kind of a fascinating read, too, as well, because they mentioned JT Miller. And one of the things they alluded to is there vindication having that pick or having the player succeed as well as JT Miller has? Despite losing those picks, which are important to an organization, don't get me wrong, but you do have to look at it in a way and say, how good is that player going to be? Considering we know where the Canucks are, right? It when you know what the pick is, you have to grade it differently, I guess, to some degree. The fear was, well, what if it's a top 10 pick two years in a row?
If this doesn't pan out and now we're picking eighth or something.
Something like that. And the cost of acquisition changes, obviously, now because it's potentially going to be in the 20s. And suddenly you look at it differently. You know, Jim didn't really say it, but you kind of do feel like there's vindication on the trade. And you're getting a lot of return because of the years you're going to get from JT Miller.
Yeah, and the acquiring a player with term is always an interesting one because some people look at it and say, oh, man, that guy has term. You're not going to be able to get off that contract if it goes south. But with a player like JT Miller, who's playing really well, he's on a very reasonable cap hit. The term is actually an asset for him. It's not like, you know, Kyle Turris in Nashville, where that's what's preventing them from moving him. That's a positive because it gives you that cost certainty. You don't have to worry about re-upping him anytime in the near future. Now, it's still a risk, obviously, because if he comes here and flops, then all of a sudden you're looking at it saying, oh, man, we still have all these years left. What are we going to do? But it's a calculated risk, and in this situation, it's paid off.
650-650 if you want to chime in as well. We'll get to some more Canucks stuff as well at noon.
Absolutely.
When Canucks Central at noon takes over. But wanted to make sure you knew the latest news with the Young Stars Tournament coming back. Should be a lot of fun. Did want to get to this because we're waiting on bated breath, all of us here as a nation, for the Baseball Hall of Fame votes to be finalized. And while some of us remain optimistic, maybe Larry Walker, not so much.
Larry Walker, he's managing expectations. I get it.
I'm glad you said that. I didn't want to say maybe he's a glass half empty kind of guy, but managing expectations is a good way to put it. He tweeted out just under an hour ago, although I believe I'm going to come up a little short today, I still want to thank all of you that have been pulling for me and showing your support. I'm grateful for all of you. It's been fun leading up to today, reading everyone's thoughts. Cheers, Larry Walker, with a beer emoji of cheers.
What a guy. You know, Dan Murphy interviewed him when the Canucks were down in Florida. He kind of said the same thing. Basically, I don't think it's going to happen for me, which is too bad, but he still really appreciates the process and appreciates all the love and support. So I do think there's an element of trying to soften the blow a little bit. If he does not get in, I'm slightly optimistic here. I kind of think it's going to happen. It's going to be really
like
close,
it's gonna happen,
but I think it's going to happen. I think he's going to get it.
It doesn't matter if you get in by one vote or 100, you get in.
Yep.
And it's going to come down to the wire. But one thing I did notice, because this whole thing, it almost stops being fun because it's so acrimonious. It's so, Larry Walker should be in. And there was like Twitter battles yesterday over it. And look, to me, Larry Walker should be in. The other one that was fascinating, though, is the Bonds and Clemens. They're coming up slowly to their 10-year expiration for Hall of Fame acceptance. And I just saw the battle again, and I just thought, I'm kind of over it.
Yeah.
The Larry Walker one I'm still here for, and part of it is national pride and all that. But the Bonds, Clemens ones, I'm just kind of over it. And I don't have the energy. And I think I felt passion for both sides of the argument at one point, and maybe that's why I'm just exhausted from it. But, you know, I wanted to ask, what sports takes are you over?
Well, and I want to say on the Hall of Fame debate, and that one with the steroids in general, but Hall of Fame debates, the thing with them is they don't really change year to year. You do them every year, and especially with someone who's been on the ballot for, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, their career is still the same. They still have the same numbers that they did the last time we did the debate. And sometimes, you know, the way we judge players and the way we look at the steroid era and, oh, if you do this statistical adjustment, maybe it looks in a different light. Those things change a little bit, but ultimately it's the same debate over and over and over again, year after year. And with the steroid debate, it definitely seems like we know what the result is now. They're not going to get in. So unless some big new angle comes out, we're kind of just beating a dead horse at this point, because whether you think they should get in or not, the side that doesn't think they should get in has pretty clearly won the argument here. They're not going to get in. It would be shocking if they got in.
And it feels like the numbers are trending in a certain way, yeah, that they're just not going to get in. But it's just one of those things that I think I'm over. I feel, yeah, like we kind of know what's going to happen, unless there's a late year resurgence and everyone just feels differently about it. I'm kind of over that one.
Yeah.
If there's something that you're over, let us know. 650-650. I also think I'm kind of over the running backs don't matter,
all right,
kind of debate. Just because I feel like we have a conclusion of, yeah, they don't matter.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I want to get into the argument anymore.
Yeah, for sure. And this, okay, so I have two here. I have a general one and a very, very specific one. The general one is the whole, like, stats versus the eye test thing. Anyone, yeah, who wants, you know, you.
Oh, here's the thing. That one's going to rage on.
For sure. But everyone knows, everyone sensible knows that you have to be good at both. You have to, mm-hmm, understand. If you're trying to analyze,
sure,
and understand a game, you have to have a basic level of understanding of certain statistics. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to watch and analyze and understand what you're seeing. You have to be able to do both. Mm-hmm. So anytime someone relies on just one and people get angry, if you cite, oh, you know, Elias Pettersson is leading the NHL in this goals above replacement metric, and people freak out at you, oh, you have to watch the games. Like, man, I am watching the games, and I'm also using this to supplement my knowledge. And that's the level we have to get at. And any of the debates that aren't starting from that premise, I'm just like, man, forget it. It's over.
I guess I'm kind of that way when it comes to sports fandom. And I say this a lot of time. It's like, just embrace bandwagon fans. Embrace them. Don't do the gatekeeping thing of, oh, you weren't a fan until Quinn Hughes arrived on the team. It's like, you can't judge people for what they put their time and money towards when the product itself wasn't great. And you can apply that to any team that struggled. I know there was that meme going around of 49ers fans that weren't at the stadium for 2014, 15, 16, 17, and suddenly 18, 19, they were there. And it's like, oh, Kansas City Chiefs fans, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah. The other thing with that is you can be a really intense fan, and when your team's going through a downtime, you're not going to be as interested. It doesn't make you less of a fan.
Yeah,
and I know for me, when I've been following teams that have been really struggling, like, I won't watch as much. It's not because I don't care. It's because I care too much, and it hurts me to see them like that. That, for me, and people are like, oh, you're a bandwagon fan, you're not watching. It's like, no, it's because it's painful to me to see them like this. That's why I'm not watching.
There's many a breakup story right there. I love you too much.
For my own health, I have to be apart from you because it's too intense.
Yeah, no, it's the... I get annoyed at times because, you know, you talk to people and there's almost like a reticence to want to admit that, like, you're back in with the fandom, because hey, it's a tough moment right now. I understand that. We were talking about it yesterday. It's just like, are you ready to buy in just yet? And some people don't want to do that because they don't be like, oh, I bought in too late or something. No, just buy in.
Buy in,
stop,
man,
shaming people for when they are, yeah, becoming fans.
And I agree. Now, I will say,
we don't do it for music. We don't do it for movies.
Oh, people absolutely do it for music. They shouldn't, but they,
yeah,
do.
Yeah, sorry, they do. But
The whole like, yeah, oh, I liked their first album better after their second album blows up. Like, come on. people shouldn't do it, but they do. And there's like a natural, without getting too deep here, it's just like a natural human thing, right? We want to judge, we want to look down on people, but I agree. Let people come on board whenever they want to come on board. I will say the only thing that's ever annoyed me about bandwagon fans is if they try to talk to you like they know more than you, even though you've been there. It's just annoying in the moment. Someone talking down to you who knows less than you is annoying.
So sensitive.
It's annoying.
All right, what's your other one?
Okay, so this one is hyper specific to the Vancouver market. And until he has played 30 NHL games, I don't want to hear anyone talking about Nikita Triamkin as a long-term solution to the Canucks defense corps, all right? That conversation is over.
Let's go.
Done and dusted. It's over. He's not a solution. He's probably not even a solution on Utica's blue line at this point, all right? It's over.
Let's go.
We're done talking about Nikita Triamkin. Josh gets it.
It's true because there's so many guys here on this roster. Like, I'm not... 2 years ago, we could have that conversation of, man, why is Derek Pouliot on the blue line? Maybe they should try for a Nikita Triamkin type. That just doesn't feel relevant anymore.
No.
I'm not opposed for giving it a chance, but everyone's got to cool down the expectations of what the player is. Because... The one interesting part, too, is the game has changed so much in the time he's been away.
Yep.
So much. Like, think how big Nikita Triamkin is, and then look how much we're fawning over Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's only going to accelerate more and more and more as the years goes on. And, you know, he's a functional skater. I'm not calling him a bad skater. He can't keep up. It's just when you're not playing at the pace that you can be for, you know, kind of prime years of your career, the expectation of what you are when you come back is going to be kind of concerning.
And I agree. Listen, hey, give everything a chance. There's no reason not to give it a chance. Bring him over to training camp if he wants. Get a look at him with other NHL players. That's fine. You never know. You could be surprised. But his profile and what he's done in the KHL does not suggest that he is going to be an NHL player, let alone an impact player or a player who changes the Canucks' blue line in any meaningful way. And as you said, they're not really working with a thin group at defense. Now, maybe you could argue it lacks high-end talent outside of Quinn Hughes, but you've got the seven guys who are on the roster now. Then you go down to Utica. You have Brogan Rafferty playing really well. Olli Juolevi, now that he's healthy, is playing really well. Guillaume Brisebois, like, everyone jokes about Guillaume Brisebois and how he's not a prospect and he's never going to be an impact player. He has 13 points in 40 games in the AHL. Do we really think Nikita Triamkin will be blowing those numbers out of the water? It's very much the case of Triamkin is like the mystery box, right? And people think he could be the next Zdeno Chara. But the only reason people have those expectations is because they don't know much about him. They haven't seen him play in such a long time. So the guys that are available, because we've seen them, we know more about them, they lose a little bit of their luster, but there's really no reason to be getting this worked up about Nikita Triamkin.
He's going to be 26.
Yeah. It's not prospect age. You're not a prospect.
Yeah.
You're just a professional hockey player.
If he comes in and he's not a top six D-man, like...
it's over.
Time over. Yep. Like, you thought you were going to develop elsewhere. That's fine. Like, if you felt that was important for your development, cool. But the Canucks are no longer in a spot where they have to be invested into Nikita Triamkin. And also, as you're pointing out, like, we just had John Weisbart on the station yesterday, and he was talking about, you know, they like their D-men overripen when they're ready for an NHL play. Now, that plays a part of it, that he should be more ripe than Jack Rathbone and Jet Wu and Olli Juolevi to some degree. But that also means you have less time to showcase how far along you are.
And then there's overripe, and then there's being 26 without having established yourself as an NHL defenseman. That's something else, right?
Yeah,
that's not just like letting a guy develop for
a
long
time.
He may
get a shot. He may only get one shot. That's the issue. Whereas Brogan Rafferty is probably, because he's come through the organization, they can give him a shot and say, hey, you know what? Yeah. We want you to go back and work on this. And they can put him back in the AHL, although he's the one wanting to deal next. But like, you can keep investing the development that you've put into him as you go along. That's what we're suggesting.
Absolutely. Bobby Roode texts in, but if Triamkin is a mystery box, he could be anything, maybe even a boat.
Precisely.
It's a very good point, Precisely. Bobby Roode. He could be a boat.
So again.
Hold on. We should mention boats quickly here, too, which we haven't brought up yet.
Oh, yeah.
How have we not talked about this? The big sporting news of the day. At the NFL draft, which is taking place in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
This spring, they're doing it all in front of the Bellagio fountains, the famous fountains you've seen in Ocean's 11.
Which is going to look awesome.
It's going to be amazing.
But that's the first reference you can make?
That's like the most famous Bellagio movie, I feel.
Sure, but not like, hey, you know when you've been to Vegas?
I don't know if everyone's been to Vegas.
And you've gone to the Bellagio fountains?
I don't know if everyone's had that experience.
All right.
But anyways, the Bellagio fountains, I think they're pretty well known. Mm-hmm. So the stage is going to be set up there. And when players are drafted, they're going to be transported from the crowd to the stage by boat in the Bellagio fountain.
Killer.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be a bunch of players, rather than be like, hey, Ma, look at me. It's going to be a bunch of players doing the Lonely Island. I'm on a boat. Look at me now.
Someone is going to wear water wings in their outfit, right?
Ooh. Does Joe Burrow have the swag?
A snorkel,
Chase
goggle.
Young? Yeah, because that one, which is the more flamboyant outfit draft, the NBA draft or the NFL? I think it's the NFL, right?
It's close, though. I think I might lean the NBA still.
I think that one's more colorful, but I think they try to do different things in the
NFL.
Yeah,
you maybe
one.
Get a little crazier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't it Tack McKinley brought a frame picture? A frame picture of his grandmother, right?
I think so, yeah. And I remember Zeke Elliott did like the crop top, yeah. That was pretty out there.
So, yeah, someone's going to do something weird.
Oh, yeah.
But also think like the logistics of this, not even just setting up the stage. How long is the first round going to take? Because they're going to have to transport everyone by boat. Mm-hmm. Is it like a speedboat? Is it a tugboat?
Paddle boat?
like the gondolier?
Yeah.
Well, Paris is right next to the street, right across the street.
Yep.
I think they have the...
The Venetian is around
Oh, the Venetian's
too.
The one with the...
With the gondola.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was thinking of Paris. Of course, Venice.
It also... It really is... it's raising the bar for the NHL draft in Montreal. What are they going to have guys like pop out of a bowl of poutine?
Yeah, let's go. UP going to be there?
Do some log rolling, maybe, to get to the stage?
What other Montreal stereotypes can we think of? The poutine would be a big one. Just coming to the stage, playing some jazz, the jazz festival. You got to come in with the...
Slide down a saxophone.
Jazz flute. You can't get drafted in the top 10 unless you can successfully play the jazz flute. 650, your thoughts.
It's the bye week, baby.
Yeah, it is the bye week. We're getting ready for, we're talking NFL draft. Canucks Central coming up. Colby Armstrong will join us at 12:30. One of the most avid Canuck watchers, and also just a guy who's kind of ahead of the curve. Talking about it last year, how much he enjoys watching Travis Green play. We'll get his thoughts of what Travis Green has done so far this year. But we should touch on the NFL as well. Super Bowl, we know the teams now. Who's got the better redemption story to you coming into this? Because Andy Reid, it's so long since he's been back in the Super Bowl. And he gets labeled as the best coach to never have won it. We were kind of doing the exercise, who else is in that conversation across sports? Pat Quinn, his name was brought up. Lindy Ruff, maybe. There's not a lot of great hot candidates. Jerry Sloan in the NBA, George Karl.
Yeah, Jerry Sloan for sure.
So, if Andy Reid gets one, that's a cool redemption for him. But Kyle Shanahan also, he's young. It's like, what are you redeeming from? Well, 28-3. That goes on his jacket.
Yep.
It goes on Dan Quinn's officially in the record books, but a lot of people pointed daggers at Kyle Shanahan and how that game unfolded of, just run the ball. You could have killed the clock when you're up by that much. And when you look at it, who to you is the better redemption story in this game, or is there another candidate?
For me, it's Andy Reid because he has the longevity, and sports fans and sports media now are so obsessed with the championship. And if you don't have a championship on your resume, it's something that people make you wear and people bring it up all the time. And Andy Reid's accomplished so much as a coach. I don't think it's fair to hang that on him, but I also realize the reality is that until he wins the Super Bowl, that's always going to be the first or second thing people bring up when they talk about Andy Reid. So just on who would I be most gratified to see get the championship, it's Andy Reid. Because I have so much respect for what he's done, and he's had some really tough losses along the way. Not that they weren't partly his fault. Mm-hmm. We all know how he's struggled at times with clock management and some other issues in games. Having said that, he's still an incredible coach, and to me, that's the number one redemption story, as you say.
I kind of think it's Shanahan. And, you know, what's stunning, too, is he's 40 years old, and he's so young. He's been in the NFL for a while.
Yep.
And this is his fifth organization. I don't mean that as a reflection of his skill set, because he's obviously very accomplished. It's just, you know, you win, and he's going to look back and say, man, there was five teams that had me in their house, that he was an offensive coordinator for Houston in 2008. And yes, it was Gary Kubiak was there, and, you know, he's had success, but he was in Washington, he was in Cleveland, he was in Atlanta. Those are four organizations that have had problems winning consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yes, he's still young. He's got a lot of time to win another one. But I look at this and I'm, you know, what a nice way to look at four other franchises for Kyle Shanahan and say, hey, you could have had this too. And the NFL is hiring younger. And you look back and you say, he could have been a 31-year-old head coach in Cleveland. Come
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Why couldn't you have coached in Cleveland? Washington, it was under his dad, but... There were some franchises that could have had Kyle Shanahan, and that might be a nice redemption for him to say, I had my chance, and then, of course, the coming off of the 28-3, it'd be a nice closing of that chapter to say, I did that.
For me, it's just he's still so young. He has so much time left to accomplish.
But
so
how many
much.
Chances do the 49ers have?
For sure.
It's tough. Like, well, the NFC is so tough.
The NFC is, yeah, it's a gauntlet for sure. But he doesn't have to coach his whole career with San Francisco. He can go other places. I mean, look, Andy Reid had success in Philly and then also in KC, right? So that's a possibility for Kyle Shanahan. I mean, the other guy to bring up, if we're just talking about past organizations, is obviously Raheem Mostert, who got cut six times, I think.
That's a good one.
And it's tough for me to, like, go in on any of those teams because, hey, you cut a running back. Okay. Like, running backs get cut all the time and they don't turn out to be this. It doesn't seem like a horrible decision by any of them, but at the same time, that's a tough experience for a player to go through, especially at a position like running back where you know you're so replaceable at any given moment. So that's a great story too. And from a player's perspective, he might be number one in the redemption rankings.
We will head to Canucks Central. Colby Armstrong coming up at 12:30. Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.